Hello to all of our listeners. You are tuned into KUCR 88.3 FM, broadcasting from the campus of the University of California, Riverside, since 1966. Today we have a very special student interview with the Chancellor of our university, Kim Wilcox, who has served this campus since August of 2013 and operates as the campus's ninth chancellor. It's our pleasure to have him in the studio this morning, and let's get right into it. Could we all just go around and introduce ourselves quickly? My name is Precious Fasikin. I'm a student of economics and anthropology. I'm in my third year.
Hi, everyone. My name is Osman Gonzalez. I'm a third year business administration major.
Hey, guys. I'm Sarah Bazzi. I'm a fourth year media and cultural studies major.
And Chancellor Wilcox.
Kim Wilcox, Chancellor.
Okay, let's get right into it.
Thank you so much for joining us today. We'll begin with this question. KUCR has for decades maintained a strong continuous relationship with UCR's surrounding community of the Inland Empire. Is it important to you as Chancellor that UCR sees itself as part of the regional community? Does UCR status as a land-grant university affect its role in the community? And can you explain what is a land-grant university?
Oh, three great questions. Let me start bottom up. So what's a land-grant university? In the narrowest sense, the Justin Morrill Act of 1863 established a process by which the federal government gave land to states with the express purpose of creating universities for their states. You could either build on that land or sell the land and use the money to build your university. But the university had to have a comprehensive frame, but also a focus on regular students, not just the rich, elite sons of doctors and lawyers that went to the Ivy League schools, but all types of students, and a focus on practical things, mechanical arts and agriculture. So land-grant universities across the country have an identity that is oftentimes associated with agriculture in particular, because in the 1860s, like 90% of the population were farmers, so that made sense. Not often recognized aspect of that was the federal government gave the land to the states, but they first stole it from the Native Americans. And so there's a sense of commitment injustice that these universities also need to recognize, and we probably haven't recognized that as fully as we have. But that's the frame of a land-grant university. They've always been connected to a broader population, not just the elite few, and to a sense of changing America. So you can't do those things, embrace a broader population and change America, if you don't engage with communities. Mm-hmm. So the very best, I think, of land-grant universities across the country have a deep connection. When I talk about our community, I remind people our last name is Riverside, University of California, Riverside. So we're you know, part of the family, I guess you would say. So that, and KUCR, of course, is one of those key links to the community.
Yeah, and building off of that idea of community, we know that UCR's ambition extends beyond its service to the local regional community to national and even global recognition. We know that your vision for a campus includes recognition as an AAU university. We're wondering if you could tell us a little bit about what the AAU is and why it's important to strive towards this designation, and what do we have to do to achieve that?
Yeah, thanks. Let me start at an earlier piece. The role of the university beyond the community.
Yeah.
If you think of a major corporation like Coca-Cola in Atlanta or Microsoft in Seattle, they're deeply tied to their communities, but they lead the world, and they bring reputation, prestige, and money, actually, to those communities. We're not a for-profit like Microsoft or Coca-Cola, but we have the same responsibility to the community. So we have to be one of the key bridges to the rest of the world, students, faculty, ideas, and inventions. The AAU is the American Association of Universities. It's a private club, essentially. The members vote each other in. I think there are now 66 members. There are over 3,000 universities in the country. They see themselves as the elites. There's about not quite half of our private universities, Harvard, Yale, Princeton. The rest are public universities. They have been relatively, over their history, relatively opaque about what the criteria were for entry. About 10 years ago, or maybe 15, they started to publish descriptors, measures of research funding and so forth that they saw as important measures. It turns out that in the last several years, UCR has moved to a place where our measures are within the range of schools that are in the AAU. Mm-hmm. It turns out there's a lot of other schools like us that have numbers that look like AAU schools that also aren't in the AAU, mm-hmm. Because part of it's they vote, essentially. I think for me, just on that point, our numbers are moving up quickly. So I'm optimistic about our future and membership in that group. But the membership is one thing. Having the values and the success is important. And we can be the best us, whether somebody wants us in their club or not, right? Mm-hmm. And so that's really where I've tried to focus. When they want us, they'll come and get us. I have been talking to people behind the scenes. But the good news is that Riverside now has the profile of those schools. And we are just as good in their categories, and we're actually better in some other categories they don't count.
Perfect.
Mm. Just as a follow-up, can you explain what are the benefits of joining this kind of elite club?
Yeah, it's like anything. If there's a small elite group, it's prestige. You know, my mother would say, you're known by the kids you hang out with, you know, in high school. You don't hang out with the bad kids. Well, the same is true through life. You're known by the company you keep. And so there's a kind of a brand visibility that's important. Those schools have, historically, I think the impact is waning, but have had a political influence because they spoke for the best of the universities in the country. So there was a bit of cachet, particularly in D.C., around their opinion on things. But again, given the rise of so many other schools, that impact is not what it once was, but still real.
You actually mentioned something earlier that jumped out to me. You said UCR is committed to first and foremost being our best selves. And I think that narrative is so important to this idea of student autonomy and student voices, which KUCR is definitely known for. And KUCR actually has a unique plan moving forward to become a 21st century version of what college radio was in the 20th century, to retain our history of broadcasting, but also practice media in all its forms in a newly constructed media center, hopefully. Already UCR students at KUCR are involved in extensive video, assisting in production for work with the BBC and NPR and others. And the station's current location, as you can see right now, we're at the North District of UCR. It's meant to be demolished in 5 years. And we understand that KUCR's new media production facilities will be located near the barn. And we get that this was your idea as well. So can you tell us more about this and what you hope to see KUCR look like in the upcoming years?
Yeah, thanks, Precious. Let me chat a little bit. We have, as I think everyone on campus knows, we're building on the north side of the campus. Mm-hmm. They're shooting up like, whoa. So we've known for a while that we were going to redevelop this space. We have to have spaces for our students that are close to campus. And KUCR is unique in almost every aspect. The only radio station we have, the facilities are unique and so forth. So consideration of what the future might be physically has been a conversation for a while. I'd asked several years ago, Lewis will remind me exactly what year, I'm sure, that we need to start to plan this. And we've had two or three different ideas come forward. Those didn't work out for one reason or another. The current plan is just as you suggest. The cottage, which is one of the more historic buildings on campus, it's a great little building, right across the street from the barn. And then the idea would be to build a modern facility adjacent to that. So there'd be a kind of an office space, I don't know, you can decide what you want to do with it, conference space, and then a production space. So that gives us a bit of a frame to think about. I'm right where you are. We got to think about, I talk about UCR. Already people around the country are saying we're a model for universities in the 21st century. Mm-hmm. So I'm saying, what do we want to be in the middle of our century? If we're the 21st century university, you know, 2054 is our 100th anniversary, what are we going to be? What do we want KUCR to be as the model for the 21st century? It probably looks different physically. It may look different programmatically. You all can decide that. But let's start to think about what a space, digital is the first word that comes to my mind, and then video is the next. You know, what does that space look like? And we're just starting. My understanding is we should start active conversations about the physical plan, how many square feet and things, probably this fall. And then in the course of construction and university planning, that'll take 2 or 3 years. But We won't throw you out of here until we have a place to put you. How's that?
that's a great
yeah. reassuring.
that's reassuring. And it's really great to hear that, just because KUCR has always had a strong relationship with our campus's chancellors. Mm-hmm. Indy Raker was the chancellor who promised us a space, got us on air, which is such a powerful and pivotal point to serve as. So having your commitment and your support of our radio station means everything. Yeah. And we can't wait to work alongside you more.
And that's a space should be a lot more visible.
Yes. I mean,
there's people who don't even know you're here.
Yeah. Do you have any suggestions on how to make our space more visible, or do you have any input on the value universities should place in students in the arts and media?
Oh, two different questions.
Yeah, a little bit.
First one, again, I think the physical, I've said for a long time, the physical location has not been optimal for the radio station. That's my personal opinion, because it's seen by, you know, students at ANI and others, but a lot of people come to campus and never come to this part of the campus. That's going to be much less the case there across from the barn, which is going to have a venue of its own. It's going to have a lot more seating than the rest. The role of students in the arts is the role of students in a university. Mm-hmm. I like to say, when I go to a meeting of professors or chancellors, people, and we're just hanging around, people ask me what I study. Nobody has ever asked me, as a bunch of professors, what I teach. Because professors don't think of themselves as teachers. Mm-hmm. Professors think of themselves as students. I study speech production, is what I would say. I mean, I teach it too, but I study speech production. And that just reminds me that all of us, whether you're a first-year student or a senior faculty member, we all think of ourselves as students. Mm-hmm. And so, whether you're a student in the chemistry lab working with a faculty member on curing cancer, or a student in the radio lab working with staff on communicating to the community, or a student in a dance class working with a faculty member on new ways to express grief through your body movements, that's all the same stuff. So it's part of the fabric of the place, in my mind. Mm-hmm.
Definitely. And I feel like media and arts at UCR, but specifically at KUCR as well, has spanned across so many aspects of life, mm-hmm. whether you're discussing grief, we're discussing quality of life, even sustainability now has come into question and come into play at KUCR. So I feel like that's so critical.
Yes. With all this new development on campus, sustainability should be at the forefront. Can you tell us how the university, as a premier research, public research university, is handling sustainability and perhaps environmental justice with our location? We're at the epicenter of Riverside County, I would say the Inland Empire, and we're notoriously known for pollution, unfortunately, and statistics of asthma are going up in children here. How are we playing a vital role to change that for our community?
Yeah, if I could parse it a little bit, the term sustainability has lots of aspects. Many people see it as environment, air, water, soil. Mm-hmm. Financial managers see it as solvency of your financial operation. You've got to be, you know, sustainable enough. So let me start with the first. And I brought along some notes, because there's a lot of stuff going on that people may or may not know about. Our solar farm is about 3.5 net, but 6 megawatts of solar power already. We plan to put another 8 megawatts on the roofs of the campus. We are, MRB, the new research building, is LEED Platinum. It's the first LEED Platinum building we've ever had on campus. The North District that we just talked about is all electric. There's going to be no fossil fuel there at all, except, you know, when we're working with the utilities to avoid that. Almost over a quarter of our fleet is now either electric or hybrid, the vehicles we see on campus. We're working on irrigation water. We use a lot of water because half of our campus is agricultural land. Mm-hmm. So we're working on non-potable and water, and also management of that water. As we build eventually 5,000 to 6,000 new beds on campus in this part of the campus, that's a huge reduction in carbon footprint of commuters and travel to the campus. which is crucial. We have long, as you probably know, worked with the city. We actually buy time on the RTA so that every student, faculty, and staff member can ride the bus for free. So it's kind of a range of things that we've done to help minimize our physical impact. This is important because it's part of our roots. I oftentimes say that Riverside, UC Riverside, gets a lot of credit for cleaning the air in Southern California. Now, we didn't change the laws, but we provided a lot of the research. In fact, the first real awareness of the impacts of the environment was some of our biology professors who saw plants not doing well in the fields and tried to figure out why that is. So we've always been deeply connected. And now in 2020, that has all the implications you talk about. Health. We now have a medical school where we actually have scientists in our medical school looking at the impacts of micro materials in the air on the pulmonary system of children, working with our engineers and working with our scientists. So this is part of our historic fabric and something we're working on all the time.
That's great to hear. You mentioned the public health. I think that's a great concern in terms of environmental sustainability, but as well as maybe a more contemporary current issue, which is coronavirus. Can you tell us if UCR has plans to address the coronavirus? Should it become a pandemic? And how do you see it potentially affecting the campus?
Yes, we have a group of people on campus who are meeting daily, every morning at 8:30, and have been for a couple of weeks now, maybe longer than that. Their early work was largely focused on UCR individuals, students, faculty, staff, who are in China, and we have some colleagues in Hubei right now, Wuhan. So keeping track of them and assisting and kind of managing, monitoring, communicating. We're moving ever faster now into planning for what might happen, depending upon the size of the impact here in the United States. And that's everything from communication plans to alternative planning for classes and access and quarantine spaces and all the rest. So we're working on it. Excuse me. We haven't communicated a lot about that work because the context is changing so quickly. And at the point that we'd communicate something, the context would change and there'd be more confusion about what the kind of communication was. So we're working on that. We have a bigger meeting scheduled for Monday morning with a larger team to both keep ourselves updated, but also look at the longer kind of scenario planning as we move ahead.
That's great. Yeah, thank you so much. And that commitment to public health, of course, connects with sustainability. And just as you said earlier, I feel like it's so critical that we acknowledge the land that we're sitting on, the soldiers upon which we stand. And you mentioned the indigenous communities of this region. And just moving forward in those conversations, I hope that the university will definitely include these communities in every step that we take, because there's no sustainability, justice and sustainability without justice for those communities as well. And I know UCR is cognizant of that.
Well, yeah, one thing, we keep talking about the North District, because we're sitting in it. But historically, we've named all of our residence facilities, residence halls, after some location in Scotland, Inverness and Glenmore and the rest. We've assembled a group of students, Native American students included, and faculty and staff, to look at names for this new whole development of the campus with an eye toward making them Indigenous related. So we're talking with Native students, or we'll be talking with Native groups around the community about names for buildings and walkways and streets that would have a connection to the land.
Yeah, that would be great. And just making space for those students as well would be critical in that. So now that you've really just shown us how far the extent of the position as chancellor goes, it's like you have your hands in every pot. So you have considerable experience.
Only the good pots.
You have considerable experience in leading a major university as a chancellor, and we see that within our organization. We also want to have like a similar approach to leadership and organization, whether it's on a large scale like university or a smaller scale like a campus radio station. And to achieve our goals in this sustaining organizational quality and cooperation among individuals, what advice would you give?
To you?
Yeah, to definitely. Because okay. we're all student leaders here.
You know, life is interesting. You live it moment to moment, day to day, and we all have aspirations. I mean, I wanted to be a professor was my aspiration. I didn't want to be a chancellor, didn't know even what a chancellor did. You know? And you do things day to day that you think are the right things to do in the moment, whether that's to please your mother or to earn a living or to you know, recruit a wife or whatever it might be. So I didn't set out to get to this place. It seems to me the advice I would give to people who aspire to have an impact is to identify the things that are important to them. For me, it was always my students and the notion that universities had a special opportunity, a special role to play in the lives of the students. I'll be honest with you, I didn't appreciate fully my sense now of land-grant universities and community. I'll be honest, as a young professor, I didn't fully appreciate that. But I did appreciate what universities had done for me and what they had done for what I thought I could help them do for my students. And that drove me a long way, and that led to other opportunities. So it seems to me, you know, find your passion is a pretty trite phrase, but identifying the things that are important to you and trying to let those be your guide would be my advice. There are tactical skills. I like to remind people, you have to listen more than talk. In a room of us, I'm doing all the talking here, but there's four of us. And we should each get about a quarter, which would mean I'd be listening three times as much as I'd be talking. And that would be the right balance. There's a lot of people who don't understand that they should listen three times as much as they talk. And we all, for those out there, everybody in the room is smiling because we agree, I think. So there's some just interpersonal management pieces that I think are important. Clarity, that's something that I've had to learn to be better at. It's easy to kind of talk, and but people, you know, some people get 5 minutes with me, 10 minutes, half an hour. I got to be pretty clear. Now, it's hard sometimes because being clear sounds harsh. And I don't want to be harsh. Nobody wants to be harsh. Well, there are some of those too, but most of us don't want to be harsh. So finding the line between clarity and kind of abruptness for me was a challenge. Yeah. I'm rambling here. I'll stop.
No. It's great advice, especially for students that are going to a school about innovation and research. I think it's really important to, you know, think with the mindset that you're always going to be creating something new and just constantly learning, constantly being a student, constantly being a thinker, even past being a university student here at UCR. So we really appreciate that. Yeah. And I think I want to take it into the world of music now that, I mean, we are at KUCR here and we all are DJs and
we love, sing?
Yeah, I mean, would you like
bring
to?
We could sing.
I know. I'll bring my guitar in the back. The drums are in the back. So are you a music fan, and what kind of music do you listen to? Can you give us a few of your desert island music choices?
I am a music fan. In fact, I was with some music faculty members just the other day, and they identified me correctly as a vocal music fan. My family was always singing. I tend to break out in song in the office to the chagrin of many of my colleagues. I just like to sing. And I haven't had a chance much in Riverside, but I've had a lot of chances over the years to sing with groups. So that's what I like. So if I were going to have my desert island song list, probably first on this would be Beethoven's Ninth Symphony, which of course has a movement that is vocal. Mm-hmm. For those who know Ode to Joy, that's the last movement of Beethoven's Ninth. Great, but the whole symphony is great. I'm a classic rock guy. Eagles, James Taylor, Carole King. And my family was a big show tunes family. So I would pull out, and there's, you know, I'm just sampling here. Mm-hmm. But show tunes, I'd go with Oklahoma and South Pacific. Now, for a lot of people out there, you're thinking, oh my goodness, this guy's old. And yes, he is. But those, they're great songs. Okay, they're kind of classic, corny, great songs. But South Pacific is about prejudice. It's about the war, but it's really about prejudice and about how two different couples dealt with it. One, I think, admirably, and one not so admirably. And Oklahoma is about kind of elite, non-elite, and poor Judd is dead. poor Judd is dead. that's about a guy who was ostracized mm-hmm. in the community and how difficult it was for him in that community in Oklahoma 100 and whatever number years ago. Mm-hmm. You have to be taught. Mm-hmm. That's the song in South Pacific. Anybody out there, go online. You have to be taught. Powerful, very short. It won't be painful to listen to, but it's a very powerful song. And then I was thinking the other day when I was talking to the faculty members, Fanfare for the Common Man, also worth grabbing. If you want to get, if you're in your front, kind of feeling a little bit beaten down, play Fanfare for the Common Man, Aaron Copland. It's just really uplifting for me.
Nice.
That's a great list. Yeah. And I love how all of your song choices seem to have a connection to just like this idea of how music connects to our social well-being. Mm-hmm. And KUCR is so committed to that. And
I forgot Carole King. I love Carole King, too, because she also has that kind of sense of connection. I'm sorry.
No, you're right. So it's just so critical that we have these spaces in which we can create the next Oklahoma.
All right.
We can recognize it all, and we can tell the stories of our region and the people who contribute to UCR and walk through these spaces every day so mm-hmm. that we may listen to them and enjoy them in the years to come. Yeah. So we really, really appreciate you being here today.
Oh, it's great fun. It's great fun.
Thank you so much.
We appreciate you supporting KUCR and walking with us into the 21st century as we hope to become and continue to serve as one of the most pivotal radio stations in the region in Southern California, setting the standard for college radio. It's really an honor to be at the station, and it's an honor to have you here.
The same. Thank you so much. Yeah. It's been fun.
Thank you.
Thank you.